women are having. Appreciate Jeff Biddy's time earlier in the show. It's been a busy show. If you're just joining us here on Wildcat Insider, had Wesley Awundu. We also had Jeff Biddy and Wyatt Thompson in hour one of the show. So it's like a star-studded lineup here. Wyatt leaves, you come in, and all the stars come out.
Yeah, I guess. I was going to say, I hope that you're not insinuating that I'm the star instead of Wyatt today.
No. Like the stars came out to talk to you.
Oh, I gotcha.
Us. Well, apparently. We're not the stars.
Yeah, and some good stuff from Wesley Awundu there, too.
That was cool. Appreciate Wes's time. Corby Irvin, who I said was the one touting that they're the most hated team in the country, apparently just said at the podium at the media event that's going on in Dayton to Kellis, who you hear on the show on a weekly basis, that Kellis asked him, why do you think you guys are the most hated team in America? His answer was?
Because we are.
Corby's attitude, I like it. He is very upfront. He's not going to beat around the bush. He's not a big coach speak type of guy at all. This goes back to I'll keep that story tucked away. But that was a story from last year. I don't know if you remember what I'm thinking of, but we'll talk about it during the break. But Corby is just very straightforward, and we'll talk to you like I was explaining to you. I don't have the audio here with me because it didn't turn into a great clip specifically, so I didn't clip it out. But just for instance, excuse me. When I was talking to him after the West Virginia game, everybody's question obviously was, are you guys in the tournament? Are you guys in the tournament? I know I'm poking a little fun at my media brethren there. That's the obvious question. You have to ask it. But I was trying to come about it in a little different way. So I think he was the first guy that I tried it on, and I just said, the point I was trying to make is, clearly if you had watched them play against Baylor and West Virginia, they would pass the eye test as an NCAA tournament caliber team. So I think I phrased it as, Corby, if someone were watching you guys the last 2 days, do you think they would feel like you guys are a tournament team? And he literally, like, this is how he responded to me. He said, yeah, we beat Baylor and just almost beat West Virginia. Yes. Just like that. And, like, I know it comes across like it's a little annoyed almost. I think he doesn't have time to deal with like all the stupid ways we try and ask questions in the media.
Right.
Because it's a game. It's kind of a game when you go through it like that in the media, trying to find creative ways to ask the same stuff over and over again. And Corby just doesn't, he's not necessarily going to play along, which honestly, I appreciate. I appreciate that as opposed to the, well, you know, we fought really hard this year. I think, you know, we've played pretty well. Hopefully we'll get it. No, I like that, man. I like Corby's style.
Well, I think his claim is somewhat valid if you're talking about having a lot of fans that at the very least are indifferent to the idea of you losing, because K-State has had a lot of those over the course of this year. If you're going to talk about just the most hated team in America, I would love to see Corby Irvin on a team with Grayson Allen, because that I believe that Duke is probably the most universally hated team in America.
Right? Yeah, and look, I'm not, again, a lot of times these guys aren't thinking about the big picture when they're saying stuff like that. I'm not going to hammer him for saying it because, like you said, I don't think he wants to, at the podium, like in that scenario, call out the fan base and be like, well, our fans hate us. But we know what he means. And you know what? As I've always said, the players are collateral damage and all the debate that rages about the coaches and what's happening with Bruce Weber and the future of the program. I totally understand them being frustrated. I'm cool with him saying that. I'm cool with him speaking his mind on that front. And if you're someone that does want to see them win, which I assume most of the fans still do, I think that helps play into the us against the world mentality, which clearly has worked out for them pretty well here in the last 2 weeks with the four games that they played, winning three and the close loss to West Virginia. I think you support it. Say, hey, you guys want to play that card? Keep doing it, man.
Sure. Whatever works.
Yeah. Keep going. So I'm totally fine with it. Now, Corby Irvin's been one piece of the puzzle off the bench that's really improved here lately, but Isaiah Maurice is another, and I know we touched on this a little bit last segment, but, you know, to me, that just provides so much more optimism for next year, what he has been able to do. And it makes you think and wonder how much different is the season, and I'm not saying it would be a ton different, but if he does not have his three-game suspension that he had, it was right at about the end of non-conference play. I think Colorado State was the first game, right?
So that because it was announced along with that Dante Williams was leaving the program.
Yeah, so it's like right as they're about to hit conference play. It just seemed to stunt his growth so much, and they started using Austin Budkey more. It really cost him so much more than the three games because, I think, you know, it was probably not the greatest thing to you know, it's just not a great feeling. It may have hurt his confidence, and he's a guy still trying to find that, find his way as a redshirt freshman. Then on top of that, it just takes you out of some action. You lose some of the rhythm and groove there, and Austin Budke becomes the guy that takes your spot for a little while. It really seemed to knock him back. I mean, if he continues his development just to the point where it even makes a difference where you win one more game early in conference season, I think that could have had a pretty big impact in just changing the narrative of what the season was becoming later in the year when they did start to struggle a bit. I'm not saying you win three more games in the league. You know, I'm not saying that you're an 11-7 team in the Big 12 all of a sudden if Isaiah Maurice doesn't get suspended, but I do think it could have had some impact.
I agree, and I think that what's been most impressive about his performance to me is that, you know, he's been able to put up these games scoring, you know, 8 or 10 points, but not against the likes of an Oklahoma State or an Iowa State, teams that we know are not that great in the post and teams that he actually would match up that well with. He had a great game against Baylor, who's probably the lengthiest team in the Big 12, and he did it by actually being a little bit more physical on defense than we typically see from him. And then on the offensive end, he knows that he can't post up against guys that have the girth that Baylor has, so he was just being really smart about finessing his way through the lane and sneaking behind them, getting to open spots. That's just a good basketball IQ and good instincts. And when you start to develop that, when you develop the mental part of your game, it leads the way to you being a breakout player as soon as the physical tools come around. And so with him getting in the weight room over the course of another offseason, you have to have some confidence that he can come in and at least be a solid contributor for you next year.
Well, and to me, it was just so much about the defense. Like, we've seen the offensive skill. I had not seen him D up on anybody. And I mean basically anybody until the Big 12 tournament. And all of a sudden, he was playing defense going toe-to-toe with two of the bigger, tougher, stronger front lines in the league in Baylor and West Virginia. They have some men down there. I mean, Baylor, it's Jonathan Motley and Joe Luol Achiuwil. You know, the seven-footer. Like, those are big, strong, skilled, big men in the conference. West Virginia is more big bruisers, but Nathan Adrian, Elijah Macon, like, those are big, strong guys inside, and he held his own defensively. Because that was always my thought next year. DJ provides you so much more than scoring. It's rebounding, toughness, energy, defending. Those are the types of things that, you know, even with this improvement, he's not going to make up. But it gives you more hope that he has that in him to take some of the edge off from losing DJ Johnson.
Yeah, I mean, the fact of the matter is K-State does not have any ground to lose when it comes into going into next year with its front court. I mean, they need absolutely everything they can possibly get out of Isaiah Maurice, and they probably need to bring in another guy. But if they can count on him to give you 20 minutes a game next year and be able to score 8 or 10 points a game, 12 points a game, that's going to be huge to bridge the gap.
I mean, let's slow the roll. Let's say, you know, if he can average 6 points a game next year, that'd be great. Like, all of a sudden asking Isaiah Maurice to score 12 points
a
game.
All right. I'll get rid of the 12. I'll stick with 8.
Okay. Like,
all right, 8 points a game next year.
I still feel like that's overshooting the mark. But one of my big pet peeves is always beginning of the year, everyone wants to say, well, this guy's going to average this much, this guy's going to average this much, and then you go through and add it up, and the team's scoring 110 points a game.
Right,
like, it's very easy to get carried away with that type of thing and not realize, you know, like Wesley Owundu is scoring 12 points a game this year, for instance, and he's K-State's leading scorer. Yeah. So, you know, I think that's an unrealistic ask of Maurice, but it is encouraging what we've seen. And Bruce Weber mentioned that they're going to need him to help defend John Collins, who is the stud for Wake Forest inside, guy who's going to be potentially an NBA draft pick this year. He may leave and go to the draft. He is like 6'9", 6'10", not the biggest guy in the world in terms of girth, 235. He's a pretty springy type of athlete just based on the limited stuff that I've watched about him. But terrific player. I mean, he was the runner-up for the player of the year in the ACC. Everybody thinks it's the best conference in the country this year. Very deep, lots of top-notch teams. This guy was the second-best player in that league, so he is a very, very good player. And that's certainly where things start when you want to talk about Wake Forest. I mean, he scored double figures in 30 of 32 games. He had 16 20-plus point games. He put 31 on Duke. He put 25 on Louisville. This is a big guy to deal with.
Well, he is, and he is kind of the wild card to the comparison that I make, saying that Wake Forest, if you're going to compare him to a Big 12 team, is probably more like an Oklahoma State or an Iowa State just because of how much they like to get up and down the floor, how much they score, how well they shoot it from the outside. But the difference is, like I just said, with Oklahoma State and Iowa State, you don't have a dominant big guy that you can go into from 15 feet and in, and you know that he's going to go grab a double-double for you. And so it'll be interesting to see if K-State can handle him, because I think that if they can keep him in check, the path to winning the game is a lot easier, but that's a big ask.
Well, and even if you let him get his points and shut down everything else,
yeah, that's true.
You know, I mean, that's the tough part. They do have some gunners on the outside that can hit threes, so if you suck in too much, he can just pop it right back out, as Wyatt said, and those guys shoot a lot of threes. I did get just a little bit more insight on Wake Forest from Tony Castricone, who's the play-by-play voice of Clemson men's basketball. They played him twice. They beat him twice. Those two of the six wins in the ACC that Clemson had. Now, Clemson's a 2-seed in the NIT. They're really probably better than their record indicates. You think K-State had a lot of close losses this year. They had a ton.
Yeah, they did.
They're not a horrible team, but he reiterated a lot of what I think we already knew, and that is that they don't play much defense. They were a little better this year defensively, but last year they gave up almost 80 points per game. But they're just a really good, solid offensive team. He pointed out they finished, everyone likes the KenPom numbers, Ken Pomeroy, advanced stats for college hoops. They finished as the eighth most efficient offense in the country. So they're a top 10 offense if you want to look at it like that, but just not a whole lot defensively. They were potentially out of the tournament picture until they won the last three games of their regular season and then a game in the ACC tournament. One of those wins was against Louisville. So like K-State, they come into this game playing pretty well and finish very hot, and they took some pretty big strides this year under Danny Manning. So that's really what we got on Wake Forest to set the stage for the matchup.
I think it's a fun matchup, kind of like when I asked Wyatt about it in the first hour. We've seen K-State really up its intensity on the defensive end of the floor over the last couple weeks. Well, for them to get their spot in the round of 64, they're going to have to do that against against maybe the best offensive team that they've faced over that stretch. I think that you could make the case that Wake Forest is better offensively than Baylor, even though it's an apples and oranges comparison. So it'll be fun to watch, and I think that K-State, if they do play with that same defensive intensity, will win the game. But as we've learned with this team over the course of 31 or 32 games, you just – don't really know for sure what's going to come out on any given night.
Yeah, see, in the broader sense, I've seen the comparison to Oklahoma State. Obviously, Oklahoma State is so much more guard-oriented. They don't have, you know, a guy inside who's scoring like John Collins is. But just in the fact that they're really good offensively, that's how they win. Defense is where they struggle. So I've seen that comparison floated out there about Wake Forest as well. 8:10 for the tip-off tomorrow night. You can catch pregame coverage starting from the K-State Sports Network here on K-Man at 7. Great moment yesterday. If you follow me on Twitter, you saw me tweet about it, but it was T.J. Johnson and Wesley Owundu going back and forth about having to play Wake Forest big man John Collins. Let's just say the Cats are pretty confident in what they have down low as compared to what Wake Forest brings to the table. You're listening to Wildcat Insider.